course, people who lost sons and brothers and the like in the war have that as a ground for contention.
W.W. Coleman, a Spink County farmer, served in the state legislature in 1945. At that time, he introduced a bill similar in intent to the law passed in the 1955 session.
I was like a prophet crying in the wilderness, all alone with no support. My bill was killed in committee for lack of interest, while other farmers were losing their boys to the service, and they were being killed in action. The Hutterites had their boys at home and were continually acquiring more land and more profits from the war, at the same time sacrificing in no way to the winning of the war. These people maintain a small totalitarian state in the heartland of America. There are an economic menace to our other people here in this community who have worked and labored for years and gone through the hard times in this country. I feel that they are parasites on our American way of life.
A Spink County doctor feels differently.
It's possible that they can out-Americanize the American in a business sense. It's difficult for other farmers or people around them to compete when their wants are so slight, from a sense of owning worldly goods, and yet they're reasonably progressive from a farming sense. They use good machinery. They don't farm like a group of people would farm from the Tyrolese or where they originated. They farm in a modern sense, and they live in an old-fashioned sense. And it's a paradox.
Sharp trading is an old American custom, but in the case of the business relations between the Hutterites and their neighbors, there is an added element, a strain of bitterness.
One day I was at the counter, and in come a group of Hutterites. They wanted to buy some electrical wiring, fixtures, sockets, and what have you, to rewire the colony out there, some of their buildings. So I didn't know what to do. They weren't electrical contractors. So I went and asked the boss what I should do, and he says, well, we're compelled to sell them. But he says, we don't have to sell them wholesale, and since they're not electrical contractors, well, you go ahead and sell them what they want and bring it in to me. So this I did. I went and filled their order and brought the invoices in, and the boss told me to take your pricing book and take and price it at the wholesale cost, only double that, and add 10%. And then show on the invoice less 10% discount. And theoretically, it winds up that they paid retail price for it. But it showed to them they were getting a 10% discount, so they took it, they accepted it, only they made one comment that this electrical stuff is awful high price, isn't it? And I says, yeah, it costs a lot of money. They didn't say anything, they paid for it, took off.
Hutterite Mike Wirtz is not concerned with the opinions of outsiders. Freedom to him is the right to worship as he pleases, to live as he pleases. If he must suffer to preserve those rights, he's ready. There is no doubt in his mind about the outcome.
We have proved ourselves through persecution. We were stoned, we were burned at a stake, our faith, and we've still got the power to do it yet. I think the more persecution we have, the better we got a chance of staying what we are, a Christian. Persecution will do us more good than harm.
Tonight's broadcast of The Hidden Revolution is the second in a series of six documentary programs designed to probe some of the big issues confronting people today. These programs are brought to you by Nationwide Mutual Insurance of Columbus, Ohio, a company that believes ordinary people working together can do extraordinary things. Nationwide is sponsoring these programs in the hope they will contribute to a better understanding of ourselves and the rapidly changing world around us. Our unprecedented scientific and technological progress presents one of the greatest problems man has had to face: how to make himself at home in an environment that sometimes appears too complex to understand and seemingly too big to control. Will man be the beneficiary or the victim of his own progress? Where will the answer come from? Well, we at Nationwide believe only from people themselves. With full knowledge of the issues, a willingness to take an active part in seeking solutions, and with a spirit of cooperation, people themselves can work out their own problems. We hope these programs will help in a small way to contribute to a keener awareness of the issues facing us and that they stimulate discussions between individuals and groups. If at the end of this broadcast you feel you would like to talk over with your family, neighbors, or others the ideas and issues raised by the Hidden Revolution, write for a free 16-page illustrated booklet containing 5 discussion guides on topics to be explored in the series. These discussion guides were prepared by Nationwide Insurance in consultation with faculty members of The Ohio State University. We believe you'll find them useful for organization and club meetings, as well as for your private use. For your free copy, simply send a postcard to Nationwide Insurance, Columbus 16, Ohio. One will be mailed to you promptly.
In South Dakota, the Hutterite issue has been settled, at least temporarily, by legislation. In all likelihood, the federal courts will render a final decision as to whose rights must be maintained and at what expense. No matter how the issue is settled, the Hutterites and their fellow South Dakotans have much in common with most other Americans. They are a concentration of a conflict as broad as our way of life. A conflict between orthodoxy and dissent, between the rights of the community and the rights of the individual. The 20th century pleads the necessity of accepting irrevocable change. With that change must come new attitudes, new ways of coping with new institutions. This unconscious desire to move with the times, however, brings to mind the words of a great Englishman, a friend of American liberty during the War for Independence. William Pitt said then that necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. Whether Pitt's concern for the rights of man can be translated into 20th century terms is a question only Americans as a group can answer. The Hutterite case is an opportunity to think about the value of freedom in specific terms. The issues posed are raised, one way or another, in every American community. 2,000 miles away from Spink County, a group of suburbanites gathered to discuss the case.
I don't think they're particularly free because they have so many restrictions imposed upon them. I think that when you get into a dangerous position where you have the head of whatever the local government is controlling economic freedom, but also controlling political freedom, religious freedom, and so forth. And this is the condition that you have with the Hutterites, because they are not only an economic group, but they're also a religious group, a political group, and therefore they have given up all of their freedoms.
In a different way, though, their neighbors have given up a lot of their freedoms in the line of conforming and having a television set and a car and a lot of the things which the Hutterites would consider essentially frivolous. Practically speaking, they are finding their own freedom to live comfortably threatened by the existence of the Hutterite community. Certainly, they're not having an easy time of it. They're suffering a financial pinch. And the reason, possibly, they're doing it is because they don't choose to live like the Hutterites.
Well, then you think that the Hutterites are more free than the...
No, I'm not saying they're more free. I'm just pointing out that it isn't a question of the Hutterites being in servitude and their neighbors being in glorious freedom. There's a different type of limitation on the freedom of their neighbors, and apparently a rather strong limitation, otherwise it wouldn't be this problem.
Freedom. Maybe that's the reason the Hutterites' neighbors are worried. They're afraid they're going to have to give up the illusion of the kind of freedom they have and be swallowed up by the illusion of the kind of freedom that the Hutterites think they have.
The Hutterite situation, or more particularly Hutterite values, provided the focal point for a student discussion at Rutgers University.
These people accept their society and we accept ours for the very same reasons. It's been pounded into our heads ever since we were small.
But there are people in both societies. I'm sure there must be Hutterites who will look around them and rebel.
Our society, I feel, is forever going forward. We are advancing at rapid rates, increasing our civilization, as you want to call it. We're advancing, really, to an easier way of life.
But look at how much harder we've made our life in striving towards this easiness. They have a much better life than we do. This constant competition of trying to get ahead and not knowing where you're going. Everyone is fighting to get on top of somebody else, and there's a lot of competition, and you don't realize your goals, and you're frustrated, and you're neurotic. That's the type of society we're in. We're rushing to something, and we don't know what it is.
The students had some things to say about freedom as a value.
I think if we were brought up in a country where there was no freedom and there were no other countries around us where we could see freedom, I think we would accept our status quo.
And yet there are people in countries that are not free who really haven't had any sort of a close contact with freedom at all, who have this basic yearning and desire for freedom, and they usually attain it in some way.
Man needs a basic motivation. And if a man can live feeling a motivation, he can live without freedom.
I think you feel more insecure with freedom, because if you don't have freedom, your life is very oriented. Everyone leads you by the hand. You will do this now, and you will do that, and everything. But with freedom, you're kind of out on your own, and you're out in the world.
Freedom asks a lot of you. You have to grow to measure up to it, be ready to accept it.
There's also a tremendous difference between this outer freedom, again, and inner freedom, this outer security and inner security.
With too much freedom, you have too many ideas. With too many ideas, you have conflict.
Syndicated columnist Max Lerner, professor of American Civilization at Brandeis University, is familiar with both the way young people think and with the problems of freedom.
Freedom is a difficult thing. It means that you not only have privileges and a chance to fulfill yourself, it means that you must also make choices as an individual. And the toughest thing in life is to make choices as an individual. And many of the breakdowns that we have in our personal lives come from the almost intolerable burden of having to make these choices, the burdens of freedom. I can understand that the Hutterites, therefore, would not suffer from some of the mental ills that the rest of us suffer from. But these mental ills I regard as the price we pay for freedom, and it's a pretty good price.
A working definition of freedom for our time is a necessity. We asked Adolph Burley, Jr., former Assistant Secretary of State and author of Tides of Crisis, to give us his.
We think of freedom as the ability of a man or woman to choose. That means choice of how life will be lived, what shall be done with it, the choice of what can be said, of what can be done, of how development of personality can be handled, of how one can work and be amused, can study, and can participate in civilization. Freedom, therefore, is essentially a question of choices.
If freedom is essentially the right to choice, there is then a right to exercise that choice in any area of one's private life. Listen to a Levittown housewife.
There's a cost of effort to make everybody conform. If Mrs. Zilch washes her floor and waxes it, they come in and they look at you, then you have to have real strength of character to say, I got better things to do with my life than to keep my floor scrubbed all the time.
Is there a danger in buckling under to the demands that we conform, even in the small things? We asked Max Lerner.
Conformity has to do with what goes on inside of you. I don't worry about a lot of items of standardization. Our danger, of course, is like the danger of totalitarian systems, that we will become an ant society. The totalitarian systems have moved much farther in that direction than we have, but there's always that danger. There's a double way in which conformity shows itself. One is by an extreme concern about the opinion of others. Am I popular? Do I belong? Do I go with the crowd? Am I accepted? Are my children accepted? Do I stick out like a sore thumb? These are the questions that have to do with the opinion of others. But to me, the problem of conformity has a deeper aspect, and that has to do with the loss of identity. Is there a person within me? Is there some fortress of strength, some irrefragable citadel that can stand up against assaults from without? And that's an important question, because the assaults from without are very strong. There is an organized assault on the mind of the individual coming from every direction today. The source of the infection is not just from the schools or from the neighborhood. The source of the infection often comes from the family itself. A child grows up in a home and takes over the values of the home. I have seen parents who worried about why their children were not individuals, and all they had to do was to look at themselves in the mirror and to see what kind of model those children have.
If the models we present our children are inadequate to the demands of freedom, it must mean that something has changed in the American scene. We asked Patrick Mallon, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union, to comment on that change.
We've had as much freedom as we've had in this country of all sorts,
because we were at peace for so long, and we had a continent which enabled the people who came to it, who were competent people, to become prosperous in it. And peace and prosperity make for freedom.
If Mr. Mallon is correct in his assessment, the preservation of American freedom in the 20th century is to be a difficult task. It will be the task of our children, too, and the equipment we give them to see it through is of first importance. Julia Ward Howe once said, "Education keeps the key of life, and a liberal education assures the first conditions of freedom, namely, adequate knowledge and accustomed thought." There are many who agree with Mrs. Howe. Here is United States Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas.
A real teacher can be the spark that preserves this concept of freedom. A conservative, stodgy teacher can go along with the tide and educate the students to regimentation. One of the sacred places in America should be the classroom. That's why the school boards are so important. That's why on this fight for liberty, some of the most important fights are going to be in the local school boards around the country. Not in the courts, not in the legislature, but right down there at the school board, because they determine the tone of the teaching, and that produces the minds of the thinking of the future.
The future of which Justice Douglas speaks is implied in the present. For the kind of world we find tomorrow must be shaped in large degree by the attitudes of people living their lives today. These are the voices of farmers and teachers, businessmen and mechanics. They all speak of one issue, freedom.
I'd like to compare some classrooms I've taught in this country with classrooms I've taught in India, where nationalism is young, and where people, young and old, care a great deal about what's going on in the world, and they care a great deal about their own freedoms. In fact, they care so much that perhaps they're a little touchy about it. I'm afraid to say that in the average classroom here, I don't see nearly or anything which compares to a similar amount of interest on the part of the average student. We're beginning to take our freedoms so much for granted. We feel it doesn't matter too much what happens in this country. We'll all end up in the same place in the long run. I'm afraid we've lost something.
But I heard something the other day that bothered me. It was a morning program, and I raised cotton, corn, wheat in western Oklahoma about 1920 to 1930. And I planted what I wanted to. Well, this program, the announcer was telling the farmers, he says, "Now, you want to pick all your cotton by November the 1st. If you don't pick it by November the 1st, well, then you got to cut it down because you won't get any pay for it," or something. I don't know. I don't really understand it. But anyway, they couldn't pick this cotton after November the 1st, or they wouldn't get subsidized for it. I feel the farmers are less free than they were in 1920.
It seems to me that we do have a lot more conformity today than we've ever had. And I think it's a matter of it being a practical thing, not a thing that you necessarily believe in, but a thing that is very often now done in terms of a fear. We've had a general attitude of fear of communism and a general ferrying out of Reds and whatnot, to the point where people, especially people who realize that perhaps they wouldn't get the opportunity even to defend themselves, say, "Well, what's the use? It's safer to play it safe." I think you can have complete freedom and conform, but I think that within that freedom you have the right not to conform.
It is apparent that freedom in this country will not be preserved by indifference. The problems faced by people like those you have just heard must be solved in specific terms. Adolph Burley has given this some thought.
The Bill of Rights was intended to guarantee certain settled constitutional liberties, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and so forth, against the government. But I do not think it was merely against the government. I think these guarantees were guarantees against any power which the American society permitted to grow up capable of restricting these freedoms. I think myself, therefore, that the Bill of Rights could be pleaded just as much against a great corporation which attempted to prevent its employees from practicing the religion which they believe or indulging in the freedom of speech which we believe we have protected here, as though the government had done it itself. I think exactly the same doctrine could be applied to a labor union. We are rapidly getting to a point where the Bill of Rights is not merely a protection against the government, but under it, the courts should protect the freedoms of any citizen when restricted by some power other than the government.
The freedoms we have heard discussed tonight are too precious to lose. A modus vivendi must be found for the interests of the Hutterites and their neighbors. A teacher's right to teach must be preserved, and the values of the community upheld. But no modus vivendi, no area of agreement can have validity unless we are sure what freedom is. We must be prepared, perhaps, to give up the efficiency gained by universal agreement. We must be prepared to defend the rights of those with whom we most disagree, as we would defend our own. There is no freedom for one of us without freedom for all. What is the outlook for the preservation of the American birthright as we speed through the second half of the 20th century? We asked Justice Douglas.
We're in an era where people stand the risk more and more of regimentation, living under the risks of technological unemployment, more and more dependent upon group action for their security and safety, for the future of their family. This regimented society that we're living under has a potential of the suppression of a lot of freedoms. That is why it's more important, I think, today than 100 years ago for the thinking people of America to become alive to these risks and to organize themselves on a community basis to fight against every inroad upon the freedom of the individual in American society.
This is Ed Morrow. Good night and good luck.